A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this prompt. He's been thinking about ratchet straps, which sounds like the most mundane thing in the world until you actually think about it. He points out that we've talked about hand trucks and folding trolleys for urban moves, but nobody ever discusses the thing that keeps your stuff from flying off those devices and taking out a pedestrian. And here in Israel, hardware stores tend to carry exactly one type of strap, sold in a blank box with no specs. So the question is, if you wanted to buy a one strap for life, something industrial grade, properly rated, reliable for any load a person moving boxes might encounter, what exactly are you looking for, and what are you avoiding?
Oh, this is my kind of question. I have been waiting for someone to ask about load securing equipment on this show.
Of course you have.
Here's the thing. The prompt is right that this is completely overlooked. People will spend hours researching which hand truck to buy, comparing weight capacities and wheel materials and handle ergonomics, and then they'll grab whatever strap is hanging on the peg at the hardware store and never think about it again. But that strap is the only thing between a 400-pound load and a crowded sidewalk.
The weak link that nobody photographs for the product listing.
And the core problem is that most consumer-grade ratchet straps are sold with almost no meaningful information. You'll see a box that says heavy duty or professional grade, or my personal favorite, maximum strength. And none of those words mean anything.
They're the world's best coffee of load securing.
There's no regulatory body certifying that your coffee is the world's best. And there's no regulatory body making sure that a strap labeled heavy duty can actually hold anything. So the first thing you need to understand is the rating system that actually matters, and it starts with three letters, WLL.
Which stands for?
Working Load Limit. This is the maximum load that the strap is designed to handle during normal use, and this is where most people get confused, because they'll see a number printed on the strap and assume that's what it can hold. But there are actually three different numbers you need to know. The working load limit, which is typically one-third of the braking strength. Then there's the braking strength itself, sometimes called the ultimate load or the minimum braking strength. And then there's something called the lashing capacity, which is double the working load limit for a straight pull.
If a strap says it can hold 1,000 pounds, it might actually mean it breaks at 3,000 and the safe working load is 1,000.
That's exactly the ratio in most rated systems. And here's why this matters for someone moving boxes in an urban environment. That one-third safety factor exists because dynamic loads are completely different from static loads. When you're pushing a hand truck over a curb or going down a ramp, the force on that strap isn't constant.
The strap that holds your boxes perfectly still in your living room might snap the moment you hit a pothole.
That's the moment you don't want to discover the difference between static and dynamic loading. I found a really clear explanation of this from a workplace safety organization. They pointed out that the braking strength is tested in a straight line pull under laboratory conditions. No angles, no movement, no vibration. As soon as you introduce any of those things, the effective capacity drops significantly. A strap at a 45-degree angle loses roughly 30% of its capacity.
Which means the hardware store strap, that's already vague about its rating, is now performing at some unknown fraction of an unknown number.
So the first thing you look for in a one strap for life is a clearly labeled working load limit from a manufacturer that actually follows an established standard. In North America, that's typically the Web Sling and Tie Down Association standard, WSTDA. In Europe, it's EN1295-2. These are testing standards that require the manufacturer to verify their ratings through actual destructive testing.
Here in Israel?
This is where it gets tricky. Israel tends to follow a mix of European and American standards depending on the product category. And for load securing equipment, the European standards are more commonly referenced. But enforcement at the consumer level is basically non-existent, which is why you see straps sold with no ratings at all. The industrial suppliers, though, They're selling to construction companies and logistics firms that have safety officers who know what to look for. Those straps will have the ratings.
The move is, skip the hardware store, go to an industrial safety supplier.
And when you get there, you're looking for a polyester webbing strap with a working load limit of at least 5,000 pounds for a 2-inch strap. That sounds like overkill for moving boxes, but remember the safety factor. A 5,000-pound WLL means the actual breaking strength is around 15,000 pounds. That's enough headroom that you're never going to come close to the limit with household goods, even with dynamic loading.
Polyester specifically, why not nylon?
That's actually useful in some applications, like towing, where you want a little shock absorption. But for securing a load to a hand truck or a dolly, you want minimal stretch. Polyester has about half the elongation of nylon under load. It also handles UV exposure better and doesn't lose strength when it gets wet. Nylon can lose up to 15% of its strength when saturated.
The nylon strap left in the rain on a balcony is degrading in ways you can't see.
That's the terrifying part. Most strap failures aren't dramatic explosions. They're gradual. UV damage, abrasion, chemical exposure, repeated overloading just below the failure point. The webbing looks fine right up until it isn't. Which brings us to the second thing you're looking for in a lifetime strap, visible wear indicators.
What does that look like?
Some manufacturers weave a red core thread into the polyester webbing. When the outer layer wears through, you see red, and that's your signal to retire the strap. It's a simple feature, but it's almost never found on consumer-grade straps. It's standard in industrial lifting slings and high-end cargo straps. Companies like Kinedine and Ancra and US Cargo Control all offer versions with wear indicators.
You're not just buying a strap. You're buying a strap that tells you when it's dying.
Which is the difference between preventative replacement and finding out your strap is dead when your boxes are scattered across an intersection.
Let's talk about the hardware itself. The ratchet mechanism. What separates a good one from the thing that's going to strip out after 3 uses?
The ratchet housing material, the pawl design, and the handle length. On cheap ratchets, the housing is often stamped steel that's just thick enough to feel solid in your hand, but not thick enough to handle repeated high-tension cycles. The pawl, that's the little tooth that engages with the gear, is often the failure point. On quality ratchets, it's forged and heat-treated. On cheap ones, it's sintered metal, which is basically metal powder compressed under heat. It's brittle.
The IKEA particle board of metallurgy.
That's exactly what it is, and you can usually spot it by looking at the finish. A forged pawl will have a smooth, uniform surface. A sintered part often looks slightly grainy or porous. But honestly, the easier tell is the price. A good ratchet mechanism alone costs more to manufacture than an entire consumer-grade strap sells for at retail.
Which brings us to what you're actually spending.
A proper industrial ratchet strap with a 2-inch polyester webbing, a 5,000-pound WLL, forged hardware, and a wear indicator is going to run you somewhere between $30 and $60 per strap. Maybe a bit more here in Israel because of import costs. Compare that to the 15-shekel strap at the hardware store, and it looks expensive. But that 15-shekel strap has an unknown rating, unknown materials, and no failure indicators. You're not saving money, you're just deferring the cost until the moment something goes wrong.
Like buying a parachute based on which one's the lightest.
That's the analogy. So, the one strap for life shopping list looks like this. 2-inch polyester webbing. Minimum 5,000-pound WLL clearly printed on the label with the testing standard referenced. Look for EN12195-2 or WSTDA, forged heat-treated ratchet hardware, double-stitched seams with a wear indicator thread, and ideally a manufacturer who's been supplying the trucking or construction industry for at least a couple of decades.
The double stitching, is that just more stitches equals better, or is there a specific pattern?
There's actually a specific pattern. The critical seam on a ratchet strap is where the webbing attaches to the end, fitting the hook or the flat hook that connects to the anchor point. In a properly constructed strap, that seam is a box stitch with an X through it, using a heavy-duty bonded polyester thread. The number of stitches per inch matters too. You want roughly 6 to 8 stitches per inch. Fewer than that, and the seam can unravel under load. More than that, and you're actually perforating the webbing too much, creating a perforation line that can tear.
There's a Goldilocks zone for stitches.
and it's one of those things that a reputable manufacturer has engineered, but a no-name factory churning out straps for the lowest possible price hasn't even thought about.
What about the hooks? The prompt mentioned roof mounting and childproofing too, so we're talking about different attachment points.
For a general-purpose moving strap, you want what's called a flat hook or a double J hook. Flat hooks are designed to slip over the edge of a truck bed or a trailer rail, but they also work well with the frame of a hand truck or a dolly. The key spec on hooks is the throat opening, the gap the hook fits over, and the material thickness. Cheap hooks are thin and will bend open under load. A quality hook is forged steel with a thickness that matches the strap's rating.
For something like childproofing, strapping a bookshelf to a wall so it doesn't tip over onto a toddler?
Different application, same principles. You want a rated strap with a clearly stated capacity, but you're looking at much lower loads. A couple hundred pounds is plenty. The more important factor there is the attachment hardware and how it's anchored to the wall. A 5,000-pound strap screwed into drywall with a plastic anchor is still going to fail at the anchor point. The system is only as strong as its weakest link.
Which is the theme of this entire conversation.
It really is, and I think that's what the prompt is getting at. People focus on the big, visible components, the hand truck, the moving boxes, the rental van, and they completely ignore the thing connecting all of it. In industrial safety, there's a concept called the hierarchy of controls. The most effective control is elimination, just remove the hazard. The least effective is personal protective equipment, put a hard hat on and hope for the best. Securing your load properly sits somewhere in the middle, but most people treat it like it's at the very bottom.
Because the strap is invisible in the mental model of I'm moving my stuff from point A to point B.
It's invisible in the pricing model too. Movers charge by the hour or by the volume. Nobody charges by the strap, so there's no market pressure to improve strap quality at the consumer level.
Let's talk about bungee cords, since the prompt mentioned them. I've seen people secure entire loads with a spiderweb of bungee cords and call it done.
Bungee cords are not load-securing devices. They're convenience items for holding a tarp in place or keeping a bundle of tent poles together. They have no rated capacity, the hooks are almost never forged, and the elastic degrades rapidly with UV exposure. Using bungee cords to secure a load on a moving vehicle is genuinely dangerous. I have seen the aftermath of a bungee cord failure. The hook becomes a projectile. It can take out an eye.
The bungee cord is the glockenspiel of load securing.
I need you to explain that one.
It's there. It's colorful. It makes you feel like something is happening, but it's not doing the job you think it's doing.
That's fair. And the thing about bungee cords that people don't realize is that the tension decreases over time. So even if you get it tight initially, an hour later it's looser. A ratchet strap, once you tension it, stays at that tension because the webbing doesn't stretch significantly and the ratchet pawl locks the gear in place.
What about the tension itself? How tight is tight enough?
There's a rule of thumb in cargo securement. You should be able to pluck the strap and get a low note, like a bass guitar string. If it's floppy, it's not tight enough. But you also don't want to over-tighten to the point where you're crushing your load. For boxes, that's rarely an issue, because the box will deform before the strap reaches its tension limit. For furniture, you need to be more careful. I have seen ratchet straps crush the frame of an IKEA bookshelf.
Because the bookshelf was engineered to hold books, not to resist lateral compression.
So you use corner protectors, little plastic or rubber guards that go between the strap and the edge of the furniture. They distribute the force and prevent the strap from cutting into the surface. Industrial suppliers sell them for a few shekels each, or you can use folded cardboard in a pinch.
Which is the moving equivalent of using a coaster.
I'm going to pretend you didn't just compare cargo securement to beverage etiquette.
You're welcome to.
The other thing about tension is that it changes with temperature. Polyester webbing doesn't expand or contract much, but your load might. Wood furniture expands and contracts with humidity. Plastic bends get more flexible in heat. So a strap that was perfectly tensioned in the morning might be slightly looser by midday if you're moving in August in Tel Aviv.
Which is when most people move, because the rental market here runs on an August calendar.
August in Tel Aviv is a humidity swamp, so you check your straps periodically. It takes 30 seconds. The alternative is discovering that your load has shifted while you're going down a flight of stairs.
Let's go back to the industrial supplier question. If someone walks into a safety supply store, the kind that sells hard hats and fall protection and gas detectors, What exactly do they ask for?
They ask for a 2-inch polyester ratchet strap with a 5,000-pound working load limit, EN1295-2 certified, with forged hardware and wear indicators. And if the person behind the counter knows their inventory, they'll know exactly what that means. If they give you a blank look, you're in the wrong store. For moving applications, a 12-foot strap is the sweet spot, long enough to wrap around a large appliance or a stack of boxes, not so long that you're dealing with yards of excess webbing flapping around. If you need longer, you can daisy chain two straps together using their hooks, though that reduces the overall working load limit slightly.
What about width? Is 2 inches the standard for a reason, or could you go narrower?
You can go narrower, but you lose capacity and you increase the pressure on the load. A 1-inch strap with the same tension is going to dig into boxes twice as much. For furniture, that means more risk of damage. For boxes, it means the strap can crush the corners. 2 inches is the standard for a reason. It's the best balance of strength, load distribution, and handling.
I've noticed industrial straps are often bright yellow or orange.
That's a visibility feature. If a strap is hanging off the side of a load, you want it to be seen. It's also easier to inspect a bright strap for damage than a black one. And some manufacturers color code their straps by capacity. Yellow for light duty, orange for medium, red for heavy. But that's not standardized, so don't rely on color alone.
The one strap for life is probably orange, 2 inches wide, 12 feet long, with a 5,000-pound WLL printed on the label and a red wear indicator thread woven into the polyester.
That's the spec. And if you take care of it, keep it out of direct sunlight when not in use, rinse off any chemicals or salt, inspect it before each use, that strap will last decades. I have ratchet straps from the 1990s that are still perfectly serviceable.
Which makes the $30 price tag look like a rounding error.
Amortized over 20 years of moves, it's $1.50 a year. The 15-shekel strap that fails on its third use is actually more expensive.
The Sam Vimes theory of ratchet straps.
The cheap thing costs more because you have to buy it 6 times.
Let's talk about what fails first in real-world use. You mentioned the pull and the stitching. What about the webbing itself?
Webbing fails in a few predictable ways. The most common is abrasion. The strap rubs against a sharp edge on a hand truck or a piece of furniture and the fibers get cut. That's why you always want to protect the strap from sharp edges. If you're securing something with a metal frame, you put a piece of cardboard or a corner protector between the strap and the metal. The second failure mode is knotting. Never tie a knot in a ratchet strap. A knot can reduce the breaking strength by up to 50% because it creates stress concentrations in the fibers.
If the strap is too long, you don't tie off the excess. You just let it flap, or you secure it with the integrated strap keeper.
Or you buy the right length in the first place. The third failure mode is chemical damage. If you're moving and you set a strap down in a puddle of something, cleaning supplies, battery acid, paint thinner, that strap is compromised. Polyester is resistant to most common chemicals, but not all of them, and you won't necessarily see the damage.
What about the ratchet mechanism itself? Does it need maintenance?
A drop of oil on the moving parts once a year is plenty. The bigger issue is rust. If you're moving in the rain or you store the strap somewhere damp, the ratchet gear can corrode. A corroded gear doesn't engage the pawl cleanly, which means it can slip under load. That's one of those failure modes that gives you no warning. One moment the strap is tight, the next moment it's not.
The sudden failure is the scary one.
It's almost always preventable with inspection. Before you tension a strap, look at the webbing. Run your hand along it. You'll feel cuts or abrasions before you see them. Check the stitching at both ends. Work the ratchet mechanism a few times to make sure it's engaging smoothly. It takes 15 seconds.
This is starting to sound like a pre-flight checklist.
In a way, it is. You're about to move several hundred pounds of your possessions through a public space. The stakes are lower than aviation, but they're not zero. A box falling off a hand truck on a crowded sidewalk is at best embarrassing and at worst a lawsuit.
Or a trip to the emergency room.
And the prompt mentioned pedestrian safety specifically, which I think is the right framing. When you're moving in an urban environment, your load security isn't just about protecting your stuff, it's about protecting everyone around you. That's why the industrial standards exist in the first place. They weren't developed for movers, they were developed for truckers securing loads on public highways. The physics are the same, just at a smaller scale.
What's the worst thing you've seen someone do with a ratchet strap?
Oh, I've seen someone use a ratchet strap as a tow rope. That's a spectacularly bad idea. Ratchet straps are not designed for shock loading. When you yank a stuck vehicle out of mud, the forces spike far beyond the working load limit. The strap can snap and the recoil can send the ratchet mechanism flying like a cannonball. There are videos of this online and they are not pretty.
The strap is not a tow strap.
Different tool, different rating system, different failure characteristics. Tow straps are designed to stretch and absorb shock. Ratchet straps are designed to hold steady tension. Using one as the other is like using a screwdriver as a chisel. It might work until it suddenly doesn't.
The multi-tool fallacy. Because it can do many things, people assume it can do everything.
The packaging doesn't help. Consumer straps often show pictures of all kinds of uses. Securing loads, towing, tying down tarps, hanging hammocks. The manufacturer has no incentive to tell you what not to do.
Which brings us back to the industrial supplier. They have a liability reason to be precise about what their products can and can't do.
Their customers demand it. A construction foreman who buys a strap rated for 5,000 pounds and has it fail at 2,000 is going to switch suppliers and tell everyone in the industry. The consumer who buys a strap at the hardware store and has it fail just assumes that's how straps are.
The accountability gap.
And it exists because the consumer market doesn't have the feedback loop that the industrial market has. If a logistics company has a load shift on the highway, there's an investigation. If a person moving apartments has a box fall off their hand truck, they pick it up and keep going and never think about why it happened.
Unless it falls on someone's foot.
Even then, they're more likely to blame themselves for not stacking properly than to blame the strap for not holding. The strap gets a free pass because nobody knows what a good strap is supposed to do.
Let's do the explicit list. If someone's listening and they want to go buy the one strap for life tomorrow, what are they buying and where are they going?
They're going to an industrial safety supplier. In Israel, places like Sadek or Shalaveth or any shop that supplies construction and logistics companies. They're asking for a 2-inch polyester ratchet strap 12 feet long with a working load limit of at least 5,000 pounds, EN12195-2 certified. They want forged heat-treated hardware, double-stitched seams with box and X-stitching, and ideally a wear indicator thread. They're paying somewhere between 120 and 200 shekels per strap. They're buying two of them, because you always want at least two for a move, one for the top and one for the bottom of the load.
They're not buying bungee cords.
They are not buying bungee cords for load securing. If they want bungee cords for bundling cables or holding a tarp, fine. But they are not substituting elastic for rated webbing.
What about cam buckle straps? I've seen those. They're like ratchet straps, but with a cam mechanism instead of a ratchet.
Cam buckles are fine for lighter loads where you don't need high tension. They're faster to use. You just pull the strap through the cam and it locks. But they don't give you the mechanical advantage of a ratchet, so you can't get nearly as much tension. For a hand truck load going downstairs, you want the ratchet. For holding a stack of boxes together on a dolly on flat ground, a cam buckle is probably fine.
The cam buckle is the sedan of load securing, and the ratchet strap is the pickup truck.
That's a reasonable way to think about it. Though I'd say the ratchet strap is more like a flatbed truck, and the cam buckle is the sedan with a roof rack. Different tools for different jobs.
Let's talk about roof mounting, since the prompt mentioned it. If someone's putting boxes on a roof rack, the strap situation changes.
It does, because now you're dealing with wind loads. At highway speeds, the force on a roof-mounted load is significantly higher than the static weight. A box that weighs 50 pounds can generate over 100 pounds of lift at 70 miles per hour. So your straps need to counteract not just gravity, but aerodynamics. That usually means more straps and higher tension, and it absolutely means checking them after the first few miles of driving because things settle and shift.
The attachment points on a roof rack. Are they rated?
Reputable roof rack manufacturers like Thule and Yakima publish load ratings for their systems. The crossbars will have a maximum dynamic load rating. That's the weight they can carry while driving. There's usually a separate static load rating for when the vehicle is parked. You need to stay under both, and you need to make sure your straps are attached to the crossbars or the side rails, not to the roof itself.
Because the roof is just sheet metal.
The roof will deform long before the strap fails. The crossbars are engineered to take the load. That's where the hooks go.
For childproofing, strapping furniture to walls. The prompt mentioned tension straps for that. Is that the same product category or something different?
It's a different category, but the same principles apply. Furniture anti-tip straps are usually sold as a kit with brackets that screw into the furniture and into the wall. The strap itself is often nylon rather than polyester because you want a little bit of give. A completely rigid connection can actually cause the furniture to crack if a child hangs on it. But you still want a rated strap with a clearly stated capacity. The ones sold at baby supply stores usually have this information. The ones sold at dollar stores usually don't.
The anchor into the wall. That's the weak point again.
A strap is only as good as what it's screwed into. For drywall, you need a proper anchor, ideally one that expands behind the drywall, like a toggle bolt. For plaster or concrete, you need different hardware. And if you're renting, you need to think about whether your landlord is going to be upset about the holes. But honestly, a few screw holes are easier to patch than a trip to the emergency room.
The cost-benefit analysis of childproofing is about as one-sided as it gets.
Yet people skip it. Same reason they skip the good ratchet straps. The risk feels abstract until it isn't.
We've covered the one strap for life. What about the strap you should definitely avoid? The anti-recommendation.
Avoid any strap that doesn't have a working load limit printed on the label. That's the absolute baseline. If the manufacturer won't tell you what the strap can hold, assume it can hold nothing. Avoid straps with plastic ratchet mechanisms. They exist, they're terrifying, and they shatter under load. Avoid straps with hooks that are just bent wire rather than forged steel. And avoid any strap that's been stored in direct sunlight for years, even if it looks fine. UV damage is cumulative and invisible.
The plastic ratchet mechanism sounds like a joke, but I've seen them.
They're sold for things like securing kayaks to roof racks or bundling camping gear. Light-duty applications where the consequences of failure are low. But people buy them and then use them for moving because they don't know the difference. And a plastic ratchet under the tension of a loaded hand truck is a disaster waiting to happen.
The kayak strap is not the moving strap.
Different failure mode. The kayak strap fails and you lose a kayak. The moving strap fails and you lose a refrigerator down a flight of stairs.
That's a vivid image.
It's meant to be. I want people to take this seriously. The prompt is right that this is the part of the moving picture that nobody discusses. Everyone talks about the dollies and the hand trucks and the packing strategies. Nobody talks about the strap. And the strap is the thing that makes all the other equipment safe.
It's the bass player of the moving operation.
Nobody notices the bass player until he stops playing.
Then the whole song falls apart.
And the bass player doesn't need to be flashy. He just needs to be solid and reliable and never miss a beat. That's what a good ratchet strap is.
We've got the spec, we've got the supplier, we've got the maintenance routine. What's the one thing you wish everyone knew about ratchet straps that nobody talks about?
The thing nobody talks about is that ratchet straps need to be stored properly when they're not in use. Most people just throw them in a drawer or a toolbox, and the webbing gets tangled and kinked and abraded by whatever else is in there. A kinked strap has reduced strength because the fibers are no longer aligned. The proper way to store a ratchet strap is to roll it up neatly and secure it with a rubber band or a Velcro strap, then keep it in a dry place out of direct sunlight. It takes 30 seconds.
The strap gets the same care you'd give a climbing rope.
The principles are actually very similar. Climbers inspect their ropes before every use. They store them carefully. They retire them at the first sign of damage, because their life depends on it. Your life might not depend on your ratchet strap, but someone else's might.
That's a good place to land. The strap is safety equipment, not a convenience item.
Once you start thinking about it that way, the whole equation changes. You stop looking for the cheapest option and start looking for the most reliable one. You inspect before you use. You store it properly. You replace it when it shows wear. It's not complicated. It just requires taking the strap seriously.
Which is what this entire conversation has been. Taking the strap seriously.
The humble ratchet strap. Finally getting its due.
Now, Albert's daily fun fact.
In the 1960s, a population of Tocumenes chilensis, a rear-fanged snake native to Chile, was discovered on Isla Grande, the Tierra del Fuego, far south of its known range. By the 1980s, the population had vanished and was presumed locally extinct, until a single specimen was found dead on a road in 2017, confirming the species had persisted undetected for decades.
A snake that faked its own extinction for 30 years.
Roadkill as scientific evidence. We take what we can get.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you learned something about ratchet straps today, tell someone before they move. You can find us at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.